Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sammasambuddhassa. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sammasambuddhassa. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sammasambuddhassa. Buddhang Dhammang Sanghang Namassami. It's April 24th, 2022. Days and nights are relentlessly passing. How well are we spending our time? When you teach, then you really learn your subject. So when you do something, you learn a craft or a skill, you kind of learn it, but then when you teach it, then you really learn it. So I'm finding that as well with practice. It's kind of like, oh, I thought I knew how to practice, but talking about practice or teaching how to practice, it's like, oh, do I really know how to practice? What am I actually teaching people? I hope I'm not misleading all of you. just leading you down some sort of wayward path that's never been done before. Hopefully that doesn't happen. So there's this strong intention to try to stay with the traditional Dhamma and not do anything wayward or necessarily off the path. And then all of these teachings are for reflection and not to be blindly followed, but just to be reflected upon and used for your own practice. So we try to teach traditional Dhamma here. We just stick with the traditional Dhamma and we don't wander too far from that. The traditional practices, the main traditional practice that we really focus on here being the precepts, of course. The 8 precepts, the 10 precepts, the 227 precepts that are followed in the monastery, or you may follow the 5 precepts outside of the monastery for devoted lay practitioners, upasakas, upasikas, that's the male and female lay followers of the sasana, the Buddha sasana, the tradition. So the precepts, what they do is they create a boundary that we don't wander outside of. We create a boundary for ourselves, and we could say that outside of that boundary is greater types of suffering that the precepts prevent us from experiencing. So, for example, if you take the 5 precepts as an example, then the first precept of not killing, you automatically cut out that amount of suffering that would occur to you if you were to kill or if you were to steal. If you were to steal, then, and you refrain from stealing, then you are automatically cut out that part of suffering that would occur if you were to steal. If you don't engage in sexual misconduct, for example, you're faithful to your partner, or then you cut out any type of suffering that occurs when there's a lack of faithfulness in relationships. And if the 4th precept, if we don't lie, then, and we are devoted to honesty and integrity, then we cut out any type of suffering that occurs when we are dishonest or when we aren't truthful with our speech. And then the 5th precept, if we refrain from mind-altering drugs, intoxicants, then we cut out any type of suffering or problems that might arise in our lives based on doing those things. So we actually cut out a lot of suffering just by keeping the precepts. So even if we don't practice meditation, then we actually really do cut out a lot of suffering. But we don't always reflect on that way, and so we still might feel hard on ourselves or down on ourselves. We meditate, we still have wayward thoughts arising in the mind, thoughts arise that we would rather not have arise in the mind. And so we might get hard on ourselves, but actually that's okay, as long as we're not acting on them, as long as we're not as when we're meditating, if we have certain thoughts and we don't act them out, then it's okay. So the precepts keep us from acting on, say, those harmful intentions. So, say, the intention to harm other beings, that's called hinsa, and ahimsa is harmlessness. And so the intention to harm, there's two different intentions. There's the intention of ill will, the intention of harmfulness. Those get kept in check by the precepts. So those get kept in check by the precepts. And there's the intention, the mental intention of covetousness. The Pali for that is abhija, and that's defined as wanting to make something that's doesn't belong to us belong to us, i.e. stealing. So abhija is the mental state which leads to theft or stealing, and so keeping that second precept keeps that mental state in check. So we might still have that mental state, but at least it's kept in check by that precept. And there's the progression of practice that the Buddha talked about. That's dana, sila, bhavana. And so this is an integrated path. It's not just about meditation or the different chanting and bowing practices that we follow in the monastery. So it's not just about that, but it's about dana or generosity. It's about sila, virtue, precepts, and it's about bhavana, which is the mental cultivation. Dana, sila, bhavana. So it starts with generosity, learning how to, as the Buddha says in the suttas, give with an open hand. And when one gives with an open hand, then one learns how to be generous. First, we're generous with external things, generous with our time. We learn how to let go of things. This is the preliminary training. You could say dana or generosity is like a preliminary training in letting go. And so when we practice different types of dana, there's the dana in terms of material gifts. And so we learn how to let go of material things. We give gifts. We give gifts at the right time. We don't just give gifts indiscriminately. When we give, we try to give what's good. Ideally, we give what's the best. We don't just give what we wanted to get rid of or what we were going to throw away anyway. So we don't practice giving things that we just used for a while and we don't want them anymore, or they're used up and they're not useful anymore, so we give them away. But we try to give what's good, give what's useful, give the best, give what we can, rather than holding on to things. That helps us to develop that internal sense of letting go. So there's giving. Giving is dana, and then chaga is giving up or relinquishing. So we develop that next step of chaga, giving up, relinquishing. There's dana, there's the material dana, there's the abhaya dana, the giving of fearlessness. That's the giving of forgiveness. So the forgiveness ceremony that we give, and it's also the undertaking of the five or the eight precepts, is considered the bestowing of fearlessness on other beings. Other human beings don't have to be afraid that we're going to intentionally harm them, intentionally take from them. We're going to be trustworthy in our relationships, trustworthy in our speech, upright in our conduct. So that's abhaya dana as well. Giving of fearlessness, giving of comfort, giving of stability, giving of ease. Then there's dhamma dana, which is the giving of dhamma. That can be done many different ways. One of the common ways that's done is through printing of Dhamma books. So if we aren't Dhamma teachers helping out with the printing or the distribution of Dhamma books, that's considered Dhamma Dana. Also, just being a good example, just keeping the precepts is Dhamma Dana as well, because it's a good example of being a Dhamma practitioner. So that's Dhamma Dana. One who gives the Dhamma gives the highest. And the Buddha taught us to not be stingy with the Dhamma, to share the Dhamma with those who would like to listen to the Dhamma. Then we share the Dhamma. We can share the Dhamma in, it's a Dhamma Santana, Dhamma conversation. We share the Dhamma with those who are interested in hearing it. So there's Dana, and then there's the Chaga. The Chaga is the giving up. And this is considered higher than Dana. So Chaga is giving up. Giving up, relinquishing. Giving up a view, giving up an opinion, giving up a stance. So it leads to a sense of harmony. Giving up, holding on to things that cause suffering, holding on to things that aren't really worth holding on to in the mind. So chaga is more of that internal quality which we bring into the meditation. Some sort of mental proliferation that just won't let up, some sort of grudge. And it's easy to hold grudges, it's easy to get irritated with people. It's easy to have views and opinions that cause us to disagree with people. And these are very hard to give up. This is called ditimana, views and opinions, deeply held standpoints. Very hard to give up. Very hard to give up. So chaga is that quality which helps us to give up these things. And without giving up these things, then we continue to be locked in. We continue to be locked into our own box that we built for ourselves with our beliefs, our views and opinions. And so this is ditimana, and chaga helps us to break through that. It's like strong medicine. It's like a strong medicine which can dissolve, the heart can be immersed in it, and it can help dissolve this thick crust that envelops the heart, the thick crust of ditimana that envelops the heart. We learn how to open, and we start to open to other people. We might be irritated with somebody, and then we open to them and start to see where they were coming from. We might even start to agree with them, or we might not start to agree with them, but we might be less irritated by them and see, oh, yeah, that's why they were acting that way. That's where they were coming from. But at first, we were only seeing them through the lens of our own views. So once the heart starts to open, we say, oh, well, one, I misunderstood where they were coming from. Two, irritation leads to suffering, so it doesn't really make sense to be irritated anyway. So with chaga, we start to move in that direction. Sila. Sadhana, sila, bhavana, sila. There's the precepts, there's the sikkhapada, is the precepts. Panatipata, wearapmani sikkhapadang samadhiyami. So that's, sikkhapada is the precept, or the sila refers to virtue. Sila isn't, the precepts aren't sila. The sila is an internal quality which is developed through the keeping of precepts. So sila we can think of as virtue. And through the undertaking of a training and sikkhapadais, you could also translate it as training guidelines. So they're not commandments. We're not going to be struck down if we break one of them, but they're training guidelines for our behavior. Our Dhamma practice is, the definition of Dhamma practice is modifying our behavior to be more wholesome and less unwholesome. That's the definition of Dhamma practice. And so modifying our behavior of body, speech, and mind. And sila. Sila is when we start to internalize those precepts. And the heart starts to guide itself in line with the precepts. And so that's sila. Sila is a internal quality. So then at the end of the precepts, there's this chant, silena sugating yanti, and so on. That's a reflection on sila. After undertaking the eight precepts or the eight sikkhapada, then there's this reflection on sila. Silena sugating yanti. Sugati is abodes of heaven or happiness. Silena bhoga sampada. So sila leads to true wealth. Silena nibuting yanti. Tasama silang visota yese. So sila then leads to a cool heart or release, leads on even to that. So therefore, cultivate sila. Therefore, give importance to sila. So that's, but it has that foundation of dana. So the Buddha has that order he goes in, is dana, sila. So we start at the beginning with generosity, and then we take it a step further by cultivating sila, cultivating that internal quality of heart, of goodness. You can even do a thought experiment to see if you have sila and just try to imagine harming somebody. Actually try to imagine if you were to, say, physically harm somebody. Can you even imagine it? And if you have a hard time imagining it, or if it causes you to recoil imagining it, then chances are sila is getting established. Either already is established or it's getting established. It's hard to give rise to those intentions of harming. We do not want to harm others. Even try to think of somebody maybe you don't like and think of actually physically harming them. Can you actually give rise to that intention? If you have a hard time giving rise to that intention, that's a good sign. The sila is being internalized. We don't want to harm anybody. We might be irritated with somebody and want them to go away, but we don't want to harm them. We don't want to do harm to them. And bhavana. Bhavana is bringing into being. Bhavana is what we call cultivation. So having planted the seeds of dana and sila, then we cultivate the field of the mind. Backing up to dana just a bit, a sense of selfishness being relinquished. Relinquishing selfishness, that's a really important, vital part of the practice as well. And when we're cultivating dana parami, then it's good to ask ourselves, am I doing this for some sort of self-benefit, or is it to benefit others, to benefit the community? It's good to ask ourselves that with anything we do. Found it really inspiring reading Lumpur Liam's biography that just came out, and it's a book that has, it's English and Thai. And Lumpur Liam reflecting on, he's known as someone who does a lot of work and has built many, many salas in different branch monasteries of Wat Nong Bapong. And he's just known as someone who has skills and does an incredible amount of work. And so people will ask him or be wondering, like, what sort of benefit does he see from that? And I've even heard people say that they were uninspired by that kind of thing. So, but Longpo Liam talking about it in his biography and saying he doesn't, he has the abilities to help out in the ways that he does, but he doesn't gain any personal benefit from the work that he does. So he doesn't gain personal benefit. And that's very hard to do. You know, doesn't gain any personal benefit from the work that he does, but it does benefit the Sangha. It does benefit the community when he does that work. And he's very, very, if you've ever been with Longpo Liam in person, when he's doing the work that he does, he's very, very peaceful. He never loses his center. He's very, whether he's sweeping a trail or grinding a piece of steel with an angle grinder, he's the same. He doesn't change. Or whether he's walking down the trail or whether he's having the meal, there's a quality that's the same. There's this evenness and steadiness that doesn't change. So we can take that as an example. So he's setting the example for us. So that's Dhamma Dana. That's Dhamma Dana coming from Longpo Liam. He doesn't have to say anything. So bhavana is a very good word. Really, everything we do can be practice. So this is our practice, this is our cultivation. Everything we do in every moment, we can be practicing, whether we're... So the Buddha talking about the four postures of sitting, standing, walking, lying down, we can be practicing. We can actually be practicing in these four different postures. And this is our cultivation. This is bhavana. Whether we're speaking, keeping silent. So when we're speaking, we won't be able to be with our meditation object when we're speaking. This was a question that was asked of Ajahn Anand when we had him on the live stream. We got to do the live Q&A with Ajahn Anand a while back, and he was asked, well, what about keeping your meditation object going at all times? And he said, Ajahn Anand said, well, when you're speaking, when you yourself are speaking, you won't be able to keep your meditation object in mind. So we have to make our speech wholesome or keeping silent. So when we speak, we have to be very careful because we can lose our center when we're speaking. So even if we're being very diligent with keeping our meditation object in place in the mind, then we still have to be careful while we're speaking. And not get lost, not get carried away while we're speaking. Trying to speak speech that is helpful, speech that is useful. I like to think of Ken Beck on our alms round in Redwood Valley. I always enjoyed going to his place. We would, at the Redwood Valley East Road alms route, we would end at his house, and he'd do a lot of talking, but it was always so useful. It was always useful speech. And he's older, so he's sharing his life knowledge with us. He's teaching us and sharing his knowledge of plants and of his garden and of the birds and of the earth. And he's everything he says is a sharing of knowledge. It's not just useless speech. It's not pointless speech. But it's sharing knowledge about the bird houses that his birds are living in, knowledge about the plants blooming, knowledge about the peacocks and the turkeys that frequent his house, knowledge about their cycles, their patterns, their annual patterns, their monthly patterns. And so this is all very useful and important knowledge about nature. In a way, you could even say it's Buddhism, because Buddhism is defined by Prapayuto. He defines it as natural law, natural truth, truth of nature. So natural truths. Buddhism can be defined as natural truth. So we're looking, we're not just holding on to some sort of dogmatic view. that we find, and saying, well, if you don't believe that, then you're not Buddhist. But we're looking to have insight into natural truths, insight into nature. That's one of the reasons I ended up staying here. So Ajahn Pasano and Ajahn Amaro were telling me I didn't have to believe in anything necessarily. It's just studying and learning and training. You have to keep the precepts. You have to keep the precepts if you want to stay here. Keep the precepts. Be harmonious. Be helpful. Help out with everything. Longpo Ban said that the one who starts to have Dhamma, when the Dhamma starts to take hold in the heart, that person will help out with everything. That's one sign that someone's starting to internalize the Dhamma. They just want to help out with everything. It's just a natural, this is a natural result, a natural truth. It's just what happens when the Dhamma starts to be internalized. And that's just how it is. Yeah. And we learn little by little, we build it up. It happens in a very natural way. The progress happens very steadily. You know, we keep the precepts, cultivate patience. This is bhavana, cultivating patience, cultivating a sense of letting go that leads to harmonious living. And so the Dhamma is the way to be harmonious. The Dhamma is the way to question our own ditimana, our own views and opinions. The Dhamma is the way to internalize the effect these natural truths have on us. So bhavana, cultivation. And the Buddha uses these similes of farming, so it really is like having to be patient, having to plant a seed, and it takes time. Having to plant a seed, and it takes time. And sometimes the seeds don't grow. Sometimes we have to plant new seeds. And, I actually kind of felt bad over the winter retreat. I had these little Bodhi fruits that I collected from, that had fallen on me from the Bodhi tree in Bodh Gaya 5 years ago, and had them on my shrine for a long time. And the seeds probably aren't viable anymore, but I passed out some of the seeds to different people. Each fruit, you break it, it's dry, and you break it open, it has like 30 to 50 tiny, tiny seeds. Very, almost hard to even see without a magnifying glass. They're so tiny. But trying to plant them and then having them not grow, and even after a long time of trying to tend them very carefully. And so sometimes we plant seeds and they don't grow. And so learning how to fail is a big part of practice. Learning how to not give up when what we've been doing hasn't been working. And being willing to try something else and plant new seeds. And I tried planting some of these seeds in my kuti and they still haven't grown. So I'm just thinking, yeah, part of me is kind of sad about it. Like, oh, I put all this work into wetting down that soil and spritzing these seeds with water and putting fertilizer on them. But then somebody had offered me some, there was this yerba buena patch up on the hill, and some was cut and offered to me. And I noticed that some of this yerba buena had little seed pods on it. So I thought, okay, well, I'll try to plant those seeds. So I broke the little seed pods open, and each seed pod had four little seeds in it. And then I tossed them into some soil, and now they're growing. So there is some seeds that are growing, and now it's just a matter of watering them and looking after them. And almost all of them are growing. So it's like planting the right seeds for this environment that we're in. the reason we bhavana, the reason we practice, is to develop a sense of ease and well-being. And we want to, everybody wants to stop suffering. Everybody wants to be more happy and not suffer. So everything we do is toward that end. But we recognize that much of our life, maybe our efforts have been misguided, and rather than bringing us more happiness, they actually brought us more suffering. So we start to say, well, what's this dana sila bhavana all about? And maybe that'll help ease that sense of tension or suffering. And we can try it out. So this is a good opportunity to try it out. When we hold the precepts, does it actually lead to less suffering? Try it out. Ask yourself, what's the effect? Has it actually led to less suffering? The practice, the meditation, the way we've been meditating, how we've been holding our meditation object, has it been helping? Has it been useful? Is there something that can be adjusted? The way we're using our speech, has it led to more suffering or less suffering? Has it led to happiness or suffering for ourselves and others? So checking the way we use speech. There's a sutta where the Buddha is saying, well, any sages that cultivated themselves to a very high degree in the past, present, or future, all of them practiced in the following way. They practiced when they were going to do a certain action, they reflected beforehand, is this action going to be of benefit or will it be unwholesome? Is it wholesome or unwholesome? While doing it, they're reflecting, is this action wholesome or unwholesome? And after they did it, they reflect, was that action I just did wholesome or unwholesome? Speech, so before they say something, they reflect, is what I'm about to say wholesome or unwholesome? While they're speaking, checking themselves, is this correct? Is this wholesome or unwholesome? After speaking, checking themselves, was that wholesome or unwholesome? And then for the way we're holding the mind, is it wholesome or unwholesome? The way we've held our mind in the past, is it wholesome or unwholesome? So the Buddha's saying that any sages who cultivated to a very high degree, they cultivated in that way in the past, in the present, and in the future they will cultivate that way as well. Anyone who made a lot of progress on the path cultivated in that way. That's the way to do it. So we're developing that reflective ability. We develop that reflective ability, and then if we want to get past just scratching the surface of the practice, then we actually have to do it for a long time. So there's that acknowledgement as well. When we hold the precepts for a long time and really develop the internal sense of sila, and we really practice generosity and things like patience for a long time, then we get beyond that stage of just scratching the surface of the practice, and the heart starts to open up. I really love that analogy of just the heart having this like crust of suffering on it and putting it in the strong medicine of the Dhamma. And yes, it's going to sting and it's going to be difficult, but it's actually curing it. And then we can experience true health and well-being. So we have that opportunity. So I'll leave it there for this evening.